The Prince of Preachers is the title that has been given for decades to the late Charles Haddon Spurgeon, who was led of God to build the famous Spurgeon's Tabernacle in London, and who I guess spoke to more people than any English preacher ever. Mr. Spurgeon began preaching when he was 19, and he was pastoring at the age of 20 the largest Baptist church in the city of London. Did not live as long as most preachers or most people. God did not allow him to live his 70. He died at the age, I think, 57, maybe 58. But most of the last 10 years of his life were spent in tragedy, heartache, disease. And much of that time was spent in France, in a little resort place called Mentone, M-E-N-T-O-N-E, Mentone, France. In the last year of Mr. Spurgeon's life, he spent much of his time in Mentone because it was a resort place and was good for his health, they thought. He sent his messages back to the church, and they read his sermons Sunday morning and Sunday evening. Someone would read the sermons or messages from the pastor who prepared them while he was in Mentone. When he was very, very ill, even sick unto death, a dear friend came to Mentone to see him. And the friend, a very wise old friend, said, "Mr. Spurgeon, you have come to Marah, haven't you?" Marah meaning the bitter waters. Mr. Spurgeon replied, "Yes, and the waters are bitter." Whereupon the friend replied, "But Mr. Spurgeon, Marah is better than Elam. Marah is better than Elam." And what the friend was saying is this. He's saying, "Mr. Spurgeon, you preach this, and you well know it's true, that the Marahs, or the bitter places in life, are better and more needed and more blessed than are the Elams." He was saying it's better for the Christian to have bitter water than sweet water. It's better for the Christian to have a tough time than an easy time. It's better for a Christian to be in a bitter place than with 70 palm trees. Or it's better for a Christian to live in Hammond than Southern California or West Palm Beach, Florida. He's saying it's better for a Christian to have clouds than sunshine. It's better for a Christian to have storm than calm. It's better for a Christian to have troubles and trials than easygoing. And Mr. Spurgeon said, "Yes, Elam or Marah is better than Elam." Oh, yes, Elam had 12 springs of water, but Marah was better. Oh, yes, Elam had 70 palm trees, but Marah was better. Oh, yes, Elam had no burdens, no heartaches, but Marah was better. Elam offered no need to prove God. Elam offered no need for a great miracle. Elam offered God no chance to prove himself. Elam offered no need for long hours with God, pleading for God's blessing. Elam offered no need for a great revelation from God. Why should a person beg God for anything? Good night. He's living in Hawaii. He's got palm trees. He has wells of fresh water. He has a perfect climate. He has a wonderful environment. He has no need at all of why beg God? Why spend time with God? But Mr. Spurgeon was simply reminded that at the time when the water is bitter, that's the time that Jesus is sweeter, and that's the time that prayer is more real, and that's the time that God can prove himself better. And so I say, the bitter is better. Think it not strange that First Baptist Church of Hammond is at Marah today. First Baptist Church of Hammond was built at Marah because it was bitter experiences that caused the sweetness of our fellowship. Listen, folks, you show me a family that's never cried together, I'll show you a family that doesn't laugh much together. You show me a man that doesn't spend time with tears streaming down his cheeks, I'll show you a man that doesn't know what it is to rejoice and clap his hands and praise the Lord. People often, I get criticized a great deal from people who come to visit here. And around the country, I get criticized a great deal for many things, but one thing that I think I get criticized perhaps the most for is that I cut up too much in the pulpit. And the other day we were in New Jersey, and so a man came to Dr. John Rice after I'd preached, and he said, "Dr. Rice, do you think it appropriate to jest in the holy desk?" I didn't talk to the fella. I don't know who he was, but somebody had mixed him all up. Yeah, it's okay to laugh and praise God and jest behind the holy desk if you go to the holy closet and spend time on your face. Listen, you cry as much as I cry, you'd have a right to laugh as much as I laugh. They that sow in tears shall reap in joy. He that knows Mara will have an Elam after a while, but no Mara, no Elams. Would the water of Elam taste good had not the water of Mara been bitter? Would the luxury of Elam be enjoyed as much had not they been to the bitter place where they did not have the luxury? We were talking, Linda last night said that, and I could tell there was a pathos in her voice. She said, "Dad, I've been out bus calling today." Of course, she goes out every Saturday all day and over in Chicago bus calling. And she said, "Dad, I don't think our people really know how some people are going to spend Christmas." She said, "We went to home, house after house today, and apartment after apartment, and flat after flat, where they have no Christmas." And she said, filth and dirt and poverty. And she said, "I just don't think people really realize what's going on some places in the world." And I said, "Sweetheart, when I was a boy, that's where I lived. I could recall Christmases with no presents. I recall one Christmas, my dad got my Christmas out of garbage cans." You say, "Brother Hiles." Yes, that's true. My dad laid oak floor for a place called the Argyle Apartments in Dallas, and we had no Christmas. And because rich people live there, my dad went down the garbage can before Christmas and went through the garbage cans. And he got some wheels and a handlebar. Oh, somebody tore a bicycle apart and tore it away, an old bicycle. And Dad put that bicycle back together. And the first bicycle I ever owned was one my dad got out of a garbage can. And everything I got for Christmas that Christmas, I was out of the garbage cans at the Argyle Apartments. But I said, "Sweetheart, I didn't know. I thought everybody got Christmas out of garbage cans. I didn't know." But I said, "Now, for us to go back to that, we'd know and we'd feel sorry for ourselves. You know, I thank God that I know what that's like. I thank God I can go to the poorest family in this area and say, 'I know how you feel.' I thank God I can reach out and say to a person who's drinking the bitter waters of Mara, and I can say, 'I know how that water tastes. I've tasted it many times.' And this church was born at Mara, not Elam. My ministry here, 15, 16, 17 years ago, was born and made at Mara, not Elam. Now we're having Elam now in many respects. We've had wonderful peace for these many years and as few ripples on the water as a church could possibly have. But that's because we had Mara one time. This great auditorium was built at Mara, not at Elam. And our high school, Hammond Baptist High School, was founded at Mara, drinking bitter waters. Was not founded at Elam, where the palm trees are 70 and beautiful and the wells are 12 and sweet. No, our Hammond Baptist grade school, thank God for our schools and Dr. Billings in the high school and Brother O'Clair in the grade school. But no, the grade school wasn't founded at Elam, where the palm trees are comfortable and the water is sweet. Was founded at Mara. Hiles Anderson College, facing a Mara now, to be sure. Did you know our students are home right now? And did you know that it'll be after the first of the year before those students that are home will come back? Did you know we have to wire them telegrams? I told them I'd wire them telegrams to tell them whether they have a college or not when the news comes. And we'll send them telegrams sometime between now and the time they come back. And all the students. I'm saying, Hiles Anderson College was built at Mara. In fact, every great institution, every great person had to go to Mara before he could ever go to Elam. Moses can cross the Red Sea, but not that he goes 40 years on the deserts alone with God. And Paul can rim the Mediterranean Sea and turn the whole Western world toward God, but not that he spends some time being persecuted and kicked and lied about and stoned for dead in Lystra and the 3 years on the Arabian desert. Everybody wants to eat him. Nobody wants Mara. I say again, no Mara, no Elam. No bitter, no sweet. No tears, no laughter.
No sadness, no rejoicing.
Ah, let me tell you something, young friends. Many of you don't know this yet, but when the bitter waters come, when the message comes that someone dear to you has been taken in death, or when the message comes that you have an incurable disease, or the message comes you've lost your job and you've lost your house, you've lost your car, everything's got to go back. Don't prick at it and don't shrink from it and don't get bitter about it. Thank God that's the way Elims are made and that's the way Elims are enjoyed. The bitter is better. I look forward with delight to my Elims. I look backward with thanksgiving to my Marahs. I always want Elims tomorrow. But yesterday, Elim looks better. Looking back on yesterday, the bitter waters were better than the sweet waters. Well, we've been going through some bitter waters here. Most of us personally have not. Most of us are well. Most of us will have plenty of food to eat through this holiday season. Most of us will get far more than we deserve. But as a church, it seems like I hate to hear the telephone ring anymore. I absolutely hate to hear it ring. It sounds like a funeral dirge every time it rings. And this week alone, I mean, what more can happen, we think? This week alone, Larry Stromberg's father, a massive stroke. And the dirty, slanderous, unnecessary, overplayed front page in the Chicago Tribune last week. So absolutely out of context. Putting international strife on the second page, and a bus worker who wants to serve God and wants to and spend 6 and 8 hours a day in the zero weather and freezing weather and snow and rain. And before any of you criticize because the bus had 113 little kids on it, which was not against the law, before any of you criticize that, you better jump up and down and thank God that somebody loves those poor kids enough to go out and buy them shoes and buy them clothes and take care of them and love them and spend hundreds of dollars and thousands of dollars a year out of our own pockets taking care of little boys and girls that nobody cares about. I, for one, will die for people like that bus captain that got in trouble last week. And I'll not criticize or listen to criticism. You say, don't think 113 kids on one bus is too many? That's not the issue. That's not the issue. It was not against the law. But anyway, I'm going to speak a few words tonight. I'm going to speak a few words about, in fact, I'm going to present our side of the story tonight. And I've called the Tribune and asked them to have a reporter here tonight to hear what I have to say tonight. I don't think they'll send a reporter because I don't think they're interested in our side of it. But I told them that too. I'm going to speak a few words tonight about it. But I'm saying we've had bitter waters. And then Wilson, 90 years of age, trying to protect someone else and save someone else's life, and probably did save someone else's life, jumped in the path of a in front of a gun, and the trigger was pulled, and he was murdered just like that. A good man who sat out and shaking his chair, has had his head nodding up and down time and time again while I've preached, and a good man, an honorable man. And all of that this week, and that's added to every week. It's been the same way ever since we've been trying to raise this $2.5 million. I know this. I've cried more tears in the last 3 months than I've cried, I'm sure, in my life. I'm tears of sorrow and tears of bereavement and tears of compassion than I've cried probably in my whole ministry put together. And it's been that way almost daily. Reasonable House, what can we do about this bitterness, this moral? I tell you what they did. They God said, I got a tree. I want you to take that tree down and throw it in that bitter water. And so Moses cut that tree down and he took that tree and threw that tree in the bitter water. And all of a sudden the water became sweet. What's the difference? The tree. The tree. 2,000 years ago there was another tree that makes any bitter water sweet. You take the tree of Calvary when Jesus on the old rugged cross suffered and died and paid the penalty for your sins and mine. I don't care what the bitter waters are. They're sweet when you throw Calvary in them. Oh, you say, well, the house, it's a mighty bitter thing about Mr. Salee. Yeah, mighty bitter thing. Except we threw the cross in Mr. Salee's, in that story, and Mr. Salee's in heaven right now. And that's the awful thing about Mr. Wilson. I guess you might think it's awful for us, but throw the cross in, he's in heaven right now rejoicing. And Mara's always made sweet. You mark it down. I'm going to make a statement. It takes more faith this morning for me to make this statement than any statement I've made in all my life. I believe we'll have the 2.5 million. I believe we will. I don't know how. I still have some hopes, and I have some dreams. I'm still working awful hard. God knows this. God, listen, if we've got to do our part first, and if we've got to go down every avenue first, this morning, there are people working on our problem. Now, none of it, I don't know. None of it may come. I don't know. But I'm simply saying, I've left no stone unturned. I've given day and night to this. And I just believe God's going to give it to us. Now, I just believe he is. And, but I'm saying, I wouldn't trade the last three or four months in the lives of our people. Now, let me tell you why. In the first place, think how good the fellowship has been with God. Some of us have carried the burden. Not all of us, but some of us. Some of us have carried the load. And some of us have been on our face begging God and fellowshipping with God for these many months. How sweet the fellowship. Listen to me. I'd rather have God's presence at Marah than not have his presence and be at Elam. I'd rather have a bitter cup in my hand drinking the bitter water and have his presence and know him better and fellowship with him more than to be basking in the balmy breezes of Elam and not feel a need for God. I don't know about you, but I guess the reason the Lord keeps me in, somebody said, well, the house, we're in a crisis all the time. Yeah, you got that when you called me. You should have called a good man to be your pastor. You called a guy that's a crooked, God's got to keep him on his back all the time, but keep him right. You called a guy that's a crooked, that God's got to keep him in trouble all the time, keep him praying. I don't know, maybe you have the same problem. I do. I get to know God better in the bitter waters. And the fellowship is sweet. I wouldn't have missed it for the world. I thought about this also. Think of the friends that we know we have now. Brother Fisk, I wish everybody could read the letters I've gotten from across America. I wish you could read my mail. I wish you could read the quivering handwriting of some little grandmother way out in California or down in Mississippi or up in New York State in some rural area. Then some little old dear woman up in years with a quivering handwriting said, I read in the Sword of the Lord about your need for $2.5 million and how Zanderson may have to close. And I don't have much, but here's all I've got. And she sent a couple of dollar bills wrapped in foil. I wish you could read the letters from churches who have 100 members or 50 members who said, oh, Zanderson College is one of the great hopes of America. It's got to stay open. We've passed our hats, and here's a check for $1,000. Listen, I've opened literally thousands of letters in the last few days. And by the way, I've read every word of every letter. I've read them on airplanes. And I listen, you don't realize this morning, the Friends First Baptist Church of Hamden, Indiana has. You just don't realize it. I read a letter this morning driving to church from a soldier boy in Germany. And the soldier boy said, Hiles Anderson, God has just got to stay open. And he said, you have thousands of friends all over the world. Brother Larry, if he's here, he understands what I mean. He understands it. It's, Mrs. Foreman, it's when your husband is taken in death that you really realize the friends that you have. It's when you reach out and you take the cup that's been sweet for so long and suddenly the cup is bitter and you spit it out and say, oh, that doesn't taste good. And then those that love you come to your side. And I recall when my dad died, I never thought flowers meant anything. I never thought that touch on the arm meant anything. But when Dad died, I counted every petal of every flower. I smelled from the fragrance of every flower in every bouquet I got. Oh, thank God for friends. Thank God for friends. And at Marah, you find your friends. At Elam, you find all the spongers. Hey, give me some of your dates from your palm. Give me some, let me have some what you got. No, but brother, when you get your back against the wall and the cup is bitter, then you can go to your closet and say, thank God for Marah. I found out how many friends I had when it was at Marah. And so the Israelites came to the bitter place. They found out the bitter is better. You know, it's a funny thing. Yesterday I called Brother Russell Anderson. And he said, guess what I was doing? I said, what? Was it yesterday? It was Thursday. He said, listen to one of your tapes. And there was a slight silence, as if he were taking a little time to gather his composure. Listen, he said, Dr. Hiles, he said, you've had better services at First Baptist Church Hammond in the last few weeks and months than you've ever had in your life.
He said, there's been something about the tape and the sermons. He said, that's been so. He said, God has been giving you some wonderful, wonderful things in the last few weeks and months. On you.
Why? Because, listen, it's always better tomorrow. People sometimes, they say, oh, why did God treat me this way?
So you could love him more. And so you could know who your friends are. Listen, friends, listen to me now. You may not have tasted your morrow yet. On your journey, it may have been all crossing red seas on dry ground. So far on your journey, it may have been all smiting the rock in Horeb and fresh water coming out. So far on your journey, it may be every morning manna has fallen from heaven. But you mark it down. You mark it down, be you 6, 16, or 60, or 106. Your morrow is going to come.
Yeah. You're going to walk the floor in a hospital room. Carter. And you're going to be fidgety, and you're not going to be hungry. And you're going to be saying, oh, I wonder if he's still breathing. Oh, I wonder why.
And you're going to do that.
You're going to do it. You're going to hear the doctor say, I don't know whether there's any hope or not. Your morrow's going to come. Yeah, your bitter water's going to come. Now, when it comes in God's dear name, don't say, you've not been good to me, God. You listen to me. God's always good. God's always good. And the time tomorrow when the bitter waters come, our Father is sweeter than ever. By the way, there's something else that I think we've learned. I said this last week. We've learned how to give. Some of us have learned how to give. Now, some of you have not learned a bit of it yet. You still got it stacked and stacked and stacked away. But some of our people, last night, head of the house came to me. A man in our church came to me. He had a jar of money, about a half gallon or a quart jar of money. He had $2 bills. He had silver dollars. He had some silver dimes. He had the children's money that come out of the piggy bank. And with emotion, he looked at me. Listen to me. I wish all of you knew what I'm talking about. He looked at me and he said, Pastor, we still owe $350 on our pledge. And I believe God's going to give it to us. But he said, if God gives it to us, we thought the best thing for us to do is give everything. He said, we bought every penny in our house and put it in this jar. He said, we don't have anything in the bank. He said, you're looking now at every penny in this world we had. When he left, I felt like I'd been in the presence of John the Baptist.
All of it! You say, poor fella!
No.
That tightwad, it's got a million left.
He's the poor fella. He's the poor fella.
Don't you ever
feel sorry for somebody who's so rich he's given everything. Some of our folks have learned how to give, thank God. And I got a note this morning under the door. One of our boys grew up in the church here. One of the sweetest notes I ever got. Said, dear pastor, he said, told me about something that Christmas will not be for them this year. And he closed it by saying, you're right, preacher. You're right. It is more blessed to give than to receive. Most of you don't know that, do you? Most of you still stacking it up, in my pocket. Oh, I got to save for any day. Well, bless your heart, it's raining now. It's raining now. And thank God many of our people have learned to give. Little children have brought their piggy banks. Brides have taken rings off their fingers and sold them. You say, Brother Hiles, that's awful. Now, I'm not saying you ought to do it. But I'm saying one thing, they're happier than you are. They've learned to give. They've learned to share. Oh, this Christmas season. And all of our lives, most of how much do I get? This old country's going to hell over folks striking so I can get something else. airline pilots and firemen and doctors and nurses and school teachers acting like pagan heathen pigs. And I'm not criticizing any of you because you belong to some of these unions and you have to strike when they do. But I'm simply saying nobody in this world ever got happy by getting something for himself. Nobody ever got happy trying to get something for his selfish or his own self. Happiness comes from giving. I wish you knew it. And some of us have found it out in the last few days. And then let me say this too. Think how good it's been to know that victory is going to come. I've said to God, as I said a while ago, Lord, you said he that hath begun a good work will finish it. He that hath begun a good work will finish it. I got a sweet letter from Mrs. John Rice, read it this morning on the way to church, opening some mail. Mrs. John Rice said, Dear Dr. Heil, first she thanked me. I brought the message at her husband's 80th birthday. And she thanked me for the poem that I wrote about is How to Make Another John Rice. And asked me if she could put it in the book she's going to publish and so forth. And then she said, Dr. Heil, isn't it exciting? She enclosed a check for $100 to the college fund, her own check. And she said, isn't it exciting sitting here waiting to see how God's going to do this thing? Yeah, it's exciting. It's exciting. But if we had Edom all the time, listen, if we had Edom, that's what's wrong with America right now. I've been living in Edom for all these years. America needs, we could use a depression. America's closer to God when we have a war, a depression. I'm not for war or depression, but in God's dear name, we are so constructed we can't take luxury. And think what God must have for us in the future. I've said this. Now listen to me. I've said recently so often, Dear Lord, now I know how you provide, and I know you're there, and I know what you've done for me all these years. But I've said, Lord, some of my people don't know you like I know you. And some of my people never have really in their lives receives a real, supernatural act of God that they can know. It's God miraculously doing something. And I said, Dear Lord, show my people. And I've been begging God to show some of you people that God is more than some old grandfather up in the heaven that made the world one time and he's sort of on retirement now and on Social Security. I've been wanting God to show you there's a living God in heaven who keeps his word and keeps his promises. And somehow I feel that he will. That he will. And so we set today at Mara. Throw in the cross. It'll become sweet. And the victory will become precious and wonderful. A lot of you this morning having tough times in your own lives. I look around and see people all over this room. The cup is bitter today. Throw in the cross. Brother Larry, throw the cross in. Throw the cross in. Let us pray.